Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Dave, we both had some interactions with listeners this week or over the past couple weeks. Richard at Costco recognized you or your voice.
Yeah.
And then I got an email from a friend of mine, Rocky from NBU. He emailed me, said his ears were burning. He heard through the NBU grapevine that I had mentioned his name on the podcast. Everybody always calls it a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a radio show first and foremost. Podcast would be, there would be long meandering train of thought things happening, whereas...
Which we're good at.
Oh, buddy. Luckily, being a radio show and having actual break constraints is good for me. I need those guardrails before I just poof off into the ether.
And restrictions on what we can and can't say.
Bingo. Yeah. Bingo. So,
yeah, Richard, him and his kids, he said they listen to us every week. He said they love our show.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
And I am, whoever it is from NBU that told Rocky that I mentioned his name, start working on him, please. I tried to get him to come on the show. I think as the Guzzler coordinator for NBU, it would be an
really
interesting show. He's doing the ho-hum thing, doesn't want to come on. But
yeah, because there's a whole, the Guzzler list for the work they're doing this year is out.
Yes.
And we talked about it in a previous episodes. And
I think most of it's been ticked off already.
Quite a bit. Quite a bit's been taken care of. So, but yeah, it should be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to get him on the show. Let's see, that's housekeeping stuff out of the way. Now, full disclosure, we're recording ahead of schedule this week because, Dave, you were going to be, you'll have a cow on ice, right?
I better have a cow elk on ice about now because that's the... Today's the second.
Today will be, yeah. When this goes to air, will be the
second.
Season
started
correct. Yesterday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I should be at camp just chilling.
That's, ideal. And we're going to talk about that after we're done recording here because I got a bunch of stuff smoking, but I'm going to do my darndest to be out there for that. Let's go. Game Warden, another person we have been trying to get on the show.
Yes.
A Game Warden.
Yeah,
I think it'd be a fascinating episode.
We've got someone who wants to really come on the show, just coordinating time. You know, they've got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Well, and it's not going to slow down because now the season's here.
Exactly. Yeah. But, so we're hoping to get them on, but we did have a chance to
talk
with them, over the phone and kind of gave us like the top five things that they seem to ticket mostly, on a higher frequency than other game violations or hunting violations. So we're going to try to hit these top five. You know, just be aware of these because they state that a lot of these folks just, through either excitement or just not knowing certain regulations or ethics and such that they don't realize they're breaking the law. And when you get caught, you're going to get ticketed and it's going to cost you, sometimes it can cost you somewhere in the four figures, depending on your violation. So
significant amount of money.
So we're going to touch on these. So
yeah, I'll rip through the list real quick and then each one of the segments will go in more in depth. There's one that we really need a game warden here for, and I'll kind of highlight that one when we get to it because I got a lot of questions and counterpoints to what the game warden said. But
Right. Let's
go. Number one is cutting out or punching the tag. Ink doesn't suffice. And I'm assuming what he was talking about here is that day, month, and like in the case of mule deer or elk, points on left, points on right.
And then kill your
kill unit.
Kill unit.
Right. And those have to be notched or punched, correct?
Correct, yeah. Like jab your knife through the number or through what the pre-existing.
I usually just cut a V out.
Yeah, cut a V out of it. Yeah, just to notch it out. Yeah, putting ink to it or pencil, that's not considered punching.
Okay.
Because those can be removed and then you can go back out and do your thing.
Do what? Gotcha. So that's reason number 832.
Yes.
I like those Havilon Peronta knives because I always used to cringe. A lot of the areas we hunt here in Nevada, the only realistic flat surface you're going to find is a rock.
Yeah.
You know,
or your leg.
Or your leg.
That's a bad
Don't do
move.
That. Or a pack frame I've used. Unless it's like one of these big elk units, like, you know, hunting desert bucks, you're out in sage flats, you get to this thing, how do I punch a tag? Well, I used to always cringe using my nice fixed blade knife to cut out that notch, like on a flat rock.
Right.
Well, now with those Havilons, I can just notch and I don't care. That thing goes in the, that's trash.
It's done. Yep. It's trashed anyway.
So number two, here's one that I gotta get some more details on.
Yeah,
this one
is a good one.
Yeah. Ask questions prior to doing the questionable act. They would rather inform you than ticket you.
Yeah.
I.
So basically what he was trying to explain to me was that if you're going and doing something and you're like, you're questioning yourself. You're like, well, I'm not sure if I can do this or not. You know, where you're, you know, you're like on that edge.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, I don't know. He says, contact them, let them know. Thing is, like I said, well, a lot of times those questionable things happen while you're in the field.
100%. Like, out of cell service.
Yeah, yeah, like, can I put my gun on this fence line? Is that private property? Is that,
I'll give you a real world example. My dad actually called and asked the question. We had, what the heck hunt was this? I think it might have been his sheep hunt. He had one rifle dialed and set up to go, but he wanted me to carry the backup. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I don't have a tag. Like, that's the last thing I want is running into a game warden, an overzealous game warden in the field.
Yeah.
And I got a rifle on my back. So he actually called and talked to, and it made perfect sense. I don't know which game warden he talked to. I don't know what office he talked to. But he was basically told, absolutely, there's no issues there. Do not let that thing touch his shoulder. And we're not, you can't be using it to glass.
Right.
You know, you can't be like, if that rifle comes off of his pack and is aimed at an animal, even if it's like, we can't tell it's unloaded if we're glassing from the valley floor.
Right.
It's just don't do that. And we're like, yeah. No, absolutely not. We're not going to do that. It's just purely, and I don't even know why he wanted, I think it was just it was a sheep hunt. He wanted to make sure all of his bases were covered or whatever.
Right. He wanted one rifle for possibly a long shot and the other
I guess
I
was like, okay, sure. So anyway, that would be a ask the question prior to doing the questionable act,
right?
Where you actually can think about it beforehand. However, I'm with you. I think most of the time it's like happens on the fly and then you're going, I wonder what,
I wonder if I can do this.
I'm going to roll with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. We might. Yeah. Let's get to number three before we go to break here, Dave. Why don't you read this one? Because I did the Cliff's Notes on my iPad.
Yeah. So this one is the trespassing.
Correct.
So what he stated on his email to me was, while Nevada is a fence out state, please leave gates the way you found them.
Yep.
Pay attention to marked properties, fields, especially as they don't have to be marked. Like agricultural fields, pivots, alfalfa, you know, things like that. And just to cover your bases, ask permission before hunting around the field, not after you've harvested an animal. We have cases where the wounded animal dies on private land and the property owner denies access to retrieve it, which the landowner has the right to tell you, you can't come on my property to go get your bull. And
yeah,
it has to lay there. You cannot do it. So that's why they say if you're hunting near the potential of an animal running onto private property is to get permission prior to that, which sometimes, again, that's one of those tougher situations depending on where you are in the state.
Yeah.
Like 121 is a good example.
You know, 067.
067.
There's those ag fields out there where it's like there's sometimes like, there's a single wide out there.
144, 145, or 143 where all those pivots are.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of places. So, I mean, some of these are tough to kind of judge when you're out there because, like, they're tough, but.
Yeah, and this is the one that I said, I want a game warden in here because I could go on for a show about this. Yeah, I mean, look, we talked about the open fields doctrine.
Right.
Like a game warden doesn't need a warrant to go on the property. So if I'm the game warden, right, and I got a hunter who calls and is like, hey, man, this guy won't let me on his property. My bull died over there, like in his field. Yeah, I'm calling a game warden.
Yeah, but I shot it 300 yards up
Look,
the mountain.
I'll show
here.
You blood where I first hit it. It ran down here and died. If I'm a game warden, if I, Henry Evans, was the game warden, I go, yeah, not a problem. I go talk to the landowner and say, hey, I got this hunter over here. He wants to recover this thing. And the landowner says no. I say, yeah, not a problem. You know, that's a fresh kill. Let me see a tag for it. You get a tag for it?
Yeah.
I need you to prove that you didn't shoot that. Because it's on your property. And according to the open fields doctrine, I can go onto your property without a warrant to investigate something. Like, I just don't understand. Yeah. Let's start next segment with that. Well, yeah, we'll talk about it over the break.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Hey, do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Hopefully, those of you that listen to the show regularly are out right now shooting with Jim Irwin. His Intro to Long Range course is currently going on, and hopefully you stocked up with ammo at Rightful Liberty Arms. And if you're one of the lucky ones with an early season tag, hopefully you hired Battle Born Tree Service to take care of those honey-do lists at home, and you're cruising out there in your truck outfitted by Truck Envy. So that's about as creative as I can get with all of the sponsor tags for this segment. Yeah, thanks.
You freed that one.
I did, 100%, man. Solid. Sent it. Let's hop right back in, Dave. We're talking about this trespassing. It's a huge issue, especially out eastern part of the state.
Yeah.
And I started to go down that rabbit hole, and I just don't understand how you get into that situation. I understand stuff happens, an animal runs on private property and dies. I do not understand why there is not a legal mechanism in place to recover the animal from a landowner. It just seems crazy to me that that would be a real thing that happens. That you shoot an animal, you can prove, here's blood. I did not shoot it on private property. It did the death sprint for 200 yards, crashed through a fence, and now it's in that guy's ag field. And the owner can just say, you can't have it?
Yeah, I mean, it's
seems ludicrous.
It does. It's a super gray area, but the game warden can go on there without permission due to investigation. So yeah. It's a tough one. It's a quagmire, man, because early season stuff, you've got to get that animal breathing.
Yeah.
And you need
to
get that hide off and open it up and
get the meat cool.
It's just sitting there in the open field while you're trying to contact a game warden or trying to do something like that. Now, are you going to get in trouble for wanton waste? Or are you going to get a ticket for that? Or is the landowner going to get the ticket for allowing the animal to sit in his field and spoil?
Right.
Especially if it's an antelope. I mean, what is that? What, 40 minutes in hot weather?
Under an hour.
The meat's garbage.
Yep.
So you run into that. Now you're another violation on top of not being able to retrieve your animal, even though it's 50 yards into private property.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
You know what? I shot a deer years ago down there outside of Genoa. You know, everybody that listens to the show knows I talk about that like 192 late season hunt down there. Used to love that thing. Anyway, this deer ran with an arrow in him. Anyway, he ran onto a guy's property, like around the cemetery there.
Oh, okay,
So folks know what I'm talking about. Long story short, the guy was cool about it. Let me retrieve it. Did ask, but he was adamant we get it out of there before his wife got up. It was like first light. I aired it at first light.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, and he was like, yeah, you guys. And then he almost acted a little upset about it. And it's like, man, it could have run like back up in the canyon. Instead, it ran down here. Yeah. And I don't know.
Yeah, I can't tell you where it's going
to
go.
I didn't know it wanted to die in your...
Yeah.
And it wasn't a yard. It was like the sage surrounding his house, but it was fenced.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, I've encountered that. Yeah. But knock on wood, I didn't have to... Yeah, do any screwing around. No. Yeah. He was cool.
Yeah, it is. It's a real gray area, and it's probably something. I mean, I don't know if it happens enough to where it has to be, legislation has to be brought in or a new regulation, a new law or something. I'm not sure if it happens, because if it did, if it was happening on a regular basis, I could see it getting proposed to, say, the Wildlife Commission and then the legislature to allow for retrieval of some sort. But yeah. I just don't think it happens enough
for it to be okay
to be like elevated to that point.
Gotcha.
Now, granted, but if it happens to you and you're the hunter out there, and it happens to you,
seems
it's a pretty dang important thing. It's like what is going on here? Yeah. Which I totally understand, because I'd be livid. I'd be like, dude, my elk is, or my deer or antelope, it's right freaking there.
Right.
Like,
I said, from the hunter's perspective, or like even if I was a game warden, right, you can't harvest roadkill in the state of Nevada.
No.
So what's the difference between that? If you're not allowed to harvest roadkill, you shouldn't be allowed to claim or take an animal that just wound up dying on your property.
Right.
And if I'm the game warden, I'm just simply asking, oh, you're not, that's yours? Not a problem. Do you have the tag for it?
Right.
I need to see the tag for it. So your choices are, I can drag this thing out of here and give it back to the hunter, or you can be ticketed for unlawful taking of game without a permit. Like,
right.
I just, anyway.
Yeah.
Enough rant.
It can go in many directions. So, yeah.
I would love to get a game warden on here, because these are the scenarios I would run by. Like, what are you doing in this case?
In this scenario, what is your best approach?
Yeah. So, all right. Let's get back to the list, Dave.
Number four is loading the weapon in your vehicle. That is a big no-no, having a loaded gun in the vehicle, or loading it while you're still in the vehicle or on a road.
Yep.
And then the fifth one is shooting over a roadway.
Define a roadway.
So a roadway is any maintained county, city, state, or federal road, if it's maintained.
Not a two-track ATV trail.
Yeah, those two tracks, you know, that kind of stuff is... Those are fine if it's a maintained road. So I was asking, because BLM maintains some of these backcountry roads.
Yes, they
so
do.
So like Slum Gullion's one.
Bingo.
So that's a maintained, technically that's a maintained road. The one that goes up over 034 Slum Gullion down into that flat.
Over by Red Mountain.
Red Mountain, all that drives along there. That would be considered
a maintained road.
A maintained road. You couldn't shoot over it, even though sections of it are kind of super duper sketchy and feel like a little two-track. It's supposedly a maintained road by BLM.
Well, think about this. Now, a lot of these bigger roads serve as unit boundaries.
Yes.
So then it's like a moot point, right?
Yeah.
You can't shoot something in another unit.
Right, exactly.
However, think about some of these roads out there that there's a clear sign, road's not maintained in winter.
That's a good point.
So if I got a tag in December, can I go ahead and smash something across this gravel road?
Technically, it's not maintained right now.
It's not maintained.
That's a good point. That'd be something for your lawyer to deal with.
Here's the problem, right? Is I keep talking about wanting a game warden on, and then we sit here and we do these little philosophical exercises.
Yeah.
And if any of them listen, they probably go, I'm not doing that. This is going to turn into a nightmare. Yeah. What if?
Yeah. But that's a good point, though. You know, it is.
It's not maintained in winter.
So for thought, it's any maintained road.
And I get the... part of it, I'm being purposely naive about some of this stuff. However, like I would point to State Line Peak out there. There's a pretty well-known herd of deer that like to winter near the top of that State Line Peak. And, you know, that whole side is pretty good. You could drive a truck up there, but it's like the old roads to the mines and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Those are not maintained roads. So if you had that unit, had that tag, and you shot like across two of those switchback ATV things, that's not a maintained road.
That's not a maintained road. You're good to go.
Yes.
Good to go.
So let's back up. Let's see, where are we at for time? Yeah, we can touch on, let's touch on this one real quick. Loaded weapons in vehicles, firearm safety, and I think he ended that one with just do not do.
Yes.
Yeah. Just don't do it.
Just don't do it.
I 100% agree with him. And I was going to say, I've been around, I have a different tolerance level, I think, than most as far as like firearm safety stuff. Portion of my life was spent in shooting guns in enclosed spaces around other human beings. However, what I was going to say is, most of the time, if not all of the time, I have a Glock that I appendix carry, and I always have one in the pipe. Always, always, always. I do not carry an unloaded gun. So that's my personal tolerance level for this stuff. However, here is the dichotomy that exists within me. I will do that where I walk around with a Glock on my waist with one in the pipe all day long. When I'm hunting, I do not like a round in the chamber until you are on an animal. And that goes for myself personally. That goes for people I hunt with.
Yeah.
Like, I think when I was on that antelope hunt with you, that's why I think I said, get the gun up or something. Like, and by that, I mean, hey, chamber around, let's go.
Right.
But I don't like creeping around with a rifle on a sling or something with one in the pipe.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with that.
No, I agree with that. I'm not comfortable with it either, especially if I've got people behind me that have guns.
Bingo.
Yeah, no, it's just too sketchy for me.
Yeah, I don't like it. And when I am out hunting and I carry in the field, I have a good old Smith & Wesson revolver that has a holster on the outside of my pack. And yeah, absolutely, every cylinder is loaded in there, but it's a revolver.
Right.
Takes a little more, you know, and the trigger is fully encompassed by that holster. So that's my firearm safety thing. We'll go into a couple more things on the firearm safety bit in just a moment. We have got to go to a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you are just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry. The stations are 99.1 KKFT and 92.3 KSVL. So we ended the last segment there, Dave, going through some firearm safety stuff. The game warden that got in touch with you said loaded weapons, one of the most common things that he sees violations in the field this time of year for hunting stuff. Now, if you got a loaded firearm in the vehicle that you intend to hunt with this time of year, you got more problems than just the loaded vehicle.
Yeah.
Because it is archery season.
It's archery season.
So I wanted to bring something up. We were talking about kind of my contradictory, I'm okay with this certain thing, but not this certain thing. Shotguns. For trucker hunters, you know, you and I get out a lot chasing birds and actually, shout out to Aaron Linfante from Battleborn Bird Dogs. I went and busted some clays with him this weekend. Nice. You know, I do a lot of trucker hunting, and I had always heard that it was illegal to lean a loaded shotgun against a vehicle. Now, I looked it up over the break because I wanted to make sure I had all my ducks in a row. So here's the verbiage under Nevada Revised Statute 503.165. It is illegal in Nevada to lean or carry a loaded shotgun on or against a vehicle that is standing on, along, or being driven on a public highway or public road. So that tells me that I've been overzealous with that because someone got that in my head years ago. And so now I'm like, okay, I lay it on the tailgate inside the vehicle, make sure it's unloaded. But according to that, it sounds like actually I could just lean my shotgun against the truck.
If it's unloaded,
or it doesn't matter if it's loaded, if it is not standing on, along, or being driven on a public highway or public road.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So if I'm like parked in
a two-track somewhere.
Middle of nowhere, it sounds like I can lean, whereas I was always told you cannot. I think that's the common thing is don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one of those ones that just kind of freaks me out. A loaded barrel pointing up.
Straight up.
You know, straight up. And
how many times have guns slid, fishing poles slid off of trucks and everything too? Yeah.
So when I was a kid, early teens, my buddy had gotten a 20-gauge shotgun for Christmas.
Okay.
He got it taken away pretty quickly because he had it sitting against his like desk in his bedroom.
Okay.
And he bumped it. It fell over. It went off. He had loaded it and he was like playing Wyatt Earp with it. And he was like ejecting shells out of it, like woohoo, you know, and just having a good time with it. Just being an idiot.
Yeah.
And he had a shell in there and it fell over and, you know, hit and it went off.
Whoa.
So ever since then, cause I was in the room when it happened and pissed myself, at least it felt like it did. But he shot a hole through the wall.
You were in the room with
him? Yeah, well, we were hanging out. And, you know, that kind of crap.
I bet that freaked you out.
Oh, buddy. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you. So he shot through the wall and into the back of the sofa.
Jeez.
So the living room was on the other side of the bedroom. So,
Man.
He got his Christmas present. So ever since then, every time I think of a gun leaning up against something or sitting where it may fall off, I think of that friend. I'm like, and anxiety kicks in. I'm like,
don't do it.
Okay, I'm not going anywhere near that thing. I'll grab it and move it or unload it or something. But yeah, so a double-edged sword for me, a good thing and a bad thing.
Absolutely. And I was going to bring up firearm safety. Now, we might as well. Hey, we're getting into it, right? We're getting into hunting season here. Talk about this real quick. Here's just my rules of the road. I don't understand. I'm going to use an example here. There's somebody that I've shot clays with who refuses to unload their shotgun in between stations. And just like not, like almost insulted by it, that you would say like, hey, is your gun empty? No, no, it's not. But safety's on. It's not. And it's like, I just don't understand that mentality. And it's like, why would you not take the 2 seconds to prevent a potentially deadly, like an accident? No right. one intends for these things to happen.
No, no,
but there's
not
that
at all.
Kind of laissez-faire thing with it. And I am not a, believe me, people listening, if you don't know me, I'm not a safety. I've fallen off this, that, or the, like, believe me, it can be screwed up in the mountains. I've screwed it up and I've lived to tell the tale. But some of this stuff to me with the firearms thing is just like, it's brain dead.
Especially when you're
laziness.
Around so many other people, but
why would you not? Like people
that just like, kind of, that's the thing he's standing on. That's
shoots
like,
a semi-automatic, loads it fully up at every station, shoots maybe two, and then puts it on safe and walks. And his muzzle awareness is good, but it's still just that thing of like, why?
Wow.
Why would you not?
Yeah, it doesn't take any extra time.
None. Yeah. It's literally.
Maybe that's just the hill that they're willing to die on. They're like, nope, this is my thing. This is what I do. And I'm not changing. Kind of, I don't know, just stubbornness.
It's mental.
Just an old guy stubbornness thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I've done it my whole life. Yeah.
I've done it my whole life, and that's just what I'm doing.
It's just crazy to me, you know? Like, why take the risk? You know, and same thing we talked about with centerfire stuff, rifle hunting, right?
Yeah.
Not wanting anybody to load until, hey, you got an animal in the sights. Okay, go ahead, chamber around. Then we're good to go. With shotguns, obviously, I have shells chambered. However, chucker hunting, generally, you are far enough apart that if there were to be an accident or something, gun gets dropped and goes off or whatever, it's fairly harmless. And we've all been out like dove season in Lahontan or something. You're getting rained on. Man, birdshot runs out of steam pretty dang quick coming out of a shotgun. It's not like a 130 grain 270 ripping across a canyon or something.
No. No,
it's
not at all.
400 or 500 yards, blech, you're getting rained on. That's about it.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've been peppered plenty of times.
Yeah.
Duck hunting.
Yes.
Yeah.
It just happens.
It is what it is.
That thing where like, okay, I can differentiate between, hey, this is center fire rifle, this is shotgun, and different tolerance levels for what constitutes safety with each.
Yeah.
I would never in a million years, even though I hunt behind pointers, I would never in a million years tell someone, hey, don't have your shotgun loaded on a chucker hunt.
Yeah,
insane.
Wait till the bird jumps and then load your shotgun.
Then load and shoot.
And then pump, then shoot. Yeah, no.
I have hunted with some old school dudes.
I wonder why you haven't shot anything this year. Yeah,
exactly. I have hunted with some old school dudes that hunt strictly over-unders or side-by-sides.
Oh.
And they keep it cracked over their shoulder until their dog goes on point.
Yeah.
So, okay, I get that's an additional layer of safety, but I just knock on wood. There we go. Knock on wood. I haven't had too many safety issues with shotguns, chucker hunting. So my tolerance level is a little different there.
Yeah.
So that is that. Let's see. Oh, we covered the shooting over a roadway thing. Don't do that. So that was it, folks. Those are the top five ticketed offenses or top five?
Pretty much the top five ticketed offenses that they get every year. So like the tag punching, like I just think that's just a matter of being excited. Like you got your animal, you're pumped, you're cleaning it out, you're processing it, you know, you're whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Gutless method, doing your thing, and you just
haven't punched. Yeah.
It's just sitting in your backpack, and you just kind of space out on it. So,
and that would have to be a situation, I'm assuming, where like you're down, you're cleaning or whatever, and a game warden just happens to come upon you.
Yeah.
Hey, let me see your tag. But if you've barely got the hide off and your pack with the tag is right there, and the game warden's like, hey, let me see. Oh, I haven't punched it yet. Like,
yeah.
I got to assume a game warden's just going to be like, hey, man, go ahead and knock that out real quick.
Yeah,
and then
but if you're at camp and it's in the cooler and you're kicking back, drinking a beer or a bourbon or something, and a game warden walks up and
that's
sees your antlers and you're just kind of relaxing and without a punch tag, then you know, that's like, okay, man, you just
issue there.
Yeah, yeah, that's an issue. But yeah,
or even driving back to town or something.
Right, yeah. That's another one of those situational things. Like, okay, you had plenty of time to pull the tag out and punch it. But I can understand if you're in the process of processing the animal, trying to get the hide off so it cools off. And
especially, like we said, antelope in August.
Oh, buddy. Anything in August.
Yeah, good point.
You know?
They got to be able to use some discretion on that. Like, hey, why don't you go ahead and knock that out while I'm standing here, and then we're good to go.
Yeah, and then I'll walk down. I'll get out of here. Get out of your hair, because I ain't helping you.
No. Oh, God, no. So that's that one. Let's see. We did the ask questions. We went through that. Yeah, again, I used that example of me carrying a second rifle during that sheep hunt.
Right.
You use common sense.
Well, another one that it wasn't on the list, but is one that seems to be becoming more and more enforced is... when you're pulling off the road, say you're cruising along and you spot some deer and you're like, hey, man, we're going to go after these. So you pull your UTV or your truck off the road into the brush.
Right.
It's increasing the fire hazards of having your exhaust sitting there on cheatgrass or something like that.
We talked about that. What was it? Last show? The fires?
I think it was. When we were talking about the fires and stuff. But that's something that it seems to be getting elevated throughout the... you know, not just game wardens, but even the feds and rangers and
seeing it more and more. And it's a ticketable offense.
I don't know if it's ticketable.
Okay.
That I don't know. That's something I wish we had a game warden on.
Please,
bing, bang, boom. Please come on the show. But that is one that is getting a lot of attention because we are so dry. We have been right now. Look at, as we were talking in the last episode, there's over 200 fires in the western states right now. And so
before we went to sit down to do this show, Dave, you pointed out there's a fire burning in the snowstorms, which is where my wife's sheep tag is at right now.
Yeah, there's a fire out there.
Yeah,
and
perfect.
I know, talking with friends out in Elko, they're dealing with the heavy smoke in the area. So part of that season, the fire season.
We have got to go to break. Sincere thank you to the show sponsors, Rightful Liberty Arms, Battleborn Tree Service, Shooting Performance Institute, and Truck Envy. Do not go anywhere. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry is coming up after the break. Segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. If you miss a segment of the show, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or search Apple Podcasts for all past episodes. Thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Battleborn Tree Service, Shooting Performance Institute, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. We are going to wrap up the show on a completely unrelated topic, although one that has crossed my desk. Or that's not true. It's just wound up on my phone. I tried to make myself sound real cool there for a second. This has crossed my desk. No, it's just in my texts. 6mm cartridges. Everybody is familiar with the old 243 Winchester or the 6mm Remington. I don't want to wax philosophical about the heritage and history on those cartridges. However, as I've talked about on the show, my daughter is shooting an old 243 Model 70 Winchester on her pronghorn hunt this year. So it's still in use. For some reason, Dave, the 6mm cartridges have absolutely exploded.
Because you're the gun guy. I am a gun shooter when I need to be.
Yeah, by necessity.
By necessity. Like in the archery world, right now everything's like the micros, the 4.5 millimeter, and then the 5mm, the sixes, the 6.5s, all of that stuff. So it just seems like with rifles, last year we were talking 7 PRC, and oh my God, it was like the gun to have. Everybody and their mother was buying one.
Yeah.
So now everyone's transitioning to a 6?
Not necessarily transitioning, different horses for courses, right?
Gotcha.
So the 6, though, why people like it, and it's funny, I just went out shooting with a friend of mine, Steve Fuller. He had Steve, you're going to have to make me own this one. I think his was a 6GT, he, it might have been a 6 arc. But 6 millimeter right now is super popular. What's happening in firearms in general, Dave, is people are kind of rediscovering these older cartridges, older bore diameter sizes, because with new modern twist rates, new modern propellants, you're kind of like breathing life back into some of this stuff.
So
like the 6 will go 243 Winchester. Actually, technically, I think 6 mil Remington was the OG, the original. 243 Winchester took off. They came out about the same time, and the 243 just outpaced it. Everybody's familiar with that, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look, my dad killed a cow elk in Montana one year with a 243. Like, there's something magic about an 85 grain partition coming out of a 243 Winchester. Great combo for deer, cow elk, whatever.
Both my kids, that's what we bought when they turned of age.
Yeah.
Was a
great rifle.
Remington 243.
Yeah.
Freaking great gun. Rifle.
So what
that's
people.
That's a 6 mil.
That's, yeah.
That's two, technically.
0.243 is 6 millimeters.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Here's the problem, though. The 243 Winchester, 6 mil Remington, 6 millimeter Remington, most factory barrels were like a 1 in 10 twist. One full twist for every 10 inches of barrel. Most factory barrels, about 22, 24 inches. So you get like 2 1/4 full twists out of it. It's not really enough to stabilize bullets heavier than about 100 grains. It was always kind of relegated to like a smaller hunting cartridge. Great for deer, you know, antelope, stuff like that, right?
Gotcha.
But it never got legs in the competition scene. It never really took off from a development standpoint until, gosh, the last, I don't know, call it a handful of years or so. The first big thing was the 6 Creedmoor. So they took a 6.5 Creedmoor, necked it down to a 6 millimeter bullet or 6 millimeter opening. They started putting factory faster twist rates, 1 in 8, 1 in 7.5, 1 in 7. So you could start shooting these 112 grainers, 108 grainers, these really high ballistic coefficient, great sectional density bullets. So then you're taking a 6 millimeter and a 243. I see your eyes glassing over there.
I'm trying to absorb all of this.
So that 6 Creedmoor kind of breathed life back into the 6 fascination with 6 millimeter cartridges. And what I'm talking about there is like a higher ballistic coefficient. It's going to shoot flatter. It's going to buck the wind better. Now you take like a 243 Winchester that I call solidly a 400 in gun on these old hunting guns, you know.
Right.
400 yards is about maximum range you can push with that sucker. Now you start getting into some of this stuff like a 6 Creedmoor, a 6 GT, a 6 Arc, and guys are taking them like out to a grand plus because they're able to shoot these newer, higher ballistic coefficient bullets that buck the wind better and shoot a little flatter. And then from that, I'm not even going to get into, there's the 6 Dasher, the 6 XC, all that. Like,
do they have a Grendel?
There's probably a 6 Grendel, Dave.
Just curious.
Somebody probably took a 6.5 Grendel and necked it down.
I think
that would be similar to like a 6 Arc, maybe.
Okay.
But there's this whole explosion and why I'm doing this rant about the 6 mil stuff. I think they're super cool. I'm going to be an anti-salesman here for a minute, Dave.
All right.
Your 243 Winchester for $430, you can get a Lilja, L-I-L-J-A. You can get a custom barrel, thread that sucker on there, have a gunsmith cut it, chamber it for 243 Winchester, buy a 1 in 7 twist. You don't need a whole new gun and you don't need a whole new cartridge.
Yeah.
The 243 Winchester has the water grain capacity of the case is perfectly fine. Modern propellants, you know, you can juice those suckers up. You don't need one of these new guns and new cartridges. Everybody's fascinated by them. And you're talking about a difference of a couple hundred feet per second in some cases, which you could probably achieve with the right primer powder combination. And I'll go back to back in the day, the Western hunting cartridge was a 300 Win Mag long throat. So you would take your 300 Win Mag, you'd take it to the local gunsmith, and you'd have him cut a longer throat into the barrel. So you could run and blow out the box magazine a little bit, so you could run your bullets farther out, get a little more powder in there, and shoot heavier bullets out of your 300 Win Mag.
Oh, okay.
That was it. Western elk gun back in the day. And by back in the day, I mean like 70s, 80s, even up until the 90s. That was the thing. Have the magazine blown out a little bit. Have a competent gunsmith cut a little longer throat in it. Now you got a 300 Win Mag long throat. And you could throw the bigger bullets.
Huh.
Do the same thing with your 243. You do not need one of these brand new $2,800 competition rifles in 6 ARC or 6 GT or 6 Dash or whatever. Just take your 243, and I promise you, most of you, if you've got an old 243 laying around, that sucker has probably been shot enough it could do with a new barrel. And that's something I think a lot of people don't pay attention to. But
interesting.
There's my 6 mil rant. Now, I'm going to talk about the bullet selection and stuff right now. I still go back to that 85 grain nozzler partition. That's a great bullet. And there's something magic about that in a 6 millimeter cartridge. It will dump everything and anything, including moose in Alaska. You know, that's the most common round used up.
Yeah, there. It's 243.
For moose.
For moose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you telling me, and then when we went to Redding, I was jibber-jabbering with EB and,
yeah, all
and
the Alaska
Rocket
crew,
and all
yeah.
the Alaskan crew, and they're like, oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
243, man. We use it for everything.
And everything.
I was like, all these years.
Yeah.
All these years.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's like, no way, man. You got to have a 300 Win Mag. You need 308. You need need that. You got those boys up there just like, nah, got my 243.
Dude, it's a phenomenal gun if you keep your ranges in check. You know, if you're talking about taking a 600-yard cross canyon rip in heavy winds, probably leave the that's beyond that. But if you're shooting, call it, I forget where that 85 grain nozzler partition, where it crosses below that 1,000 foot-pounds of kinetic energy threshold, call it 350-ish for sake of argument. 350 and in. 6 mil's a great gun, especially for Nevada. Mule deer, I mean, cow elk, whatever. Keep your yardage reasonable and stay away from a cup and core bullet. I'd stick with something like a bonded or like a partition style, an occluded base one. But anyway, there is my 6 mil rant. Man, if I had two guns, if someone put a gun to my head and said, Henry,
you can only have two.
You can only have two guns for everything in North America. I think you'd be hard pressed to beat a 243 Winchester and a 30-06.
Yeah, because that's what I have. The two guns I have is the 243 and the 308.
Yeah,
that's
something
it.
In 30 cal, something in 6 mil or 243.
Yeah.
Man, your bases are covered for just about everything from brown bear on down.
I guess I don't need to buy any more guns. That leaves more money for archery.
Hold on, I misspoke. I would, if I only had to have 15 guns.
Yeah.
So, hey. Thank you to all of you for taking time out of your Sunday to tune in, listen to Dave and I. Man, hopefully a pile of you are out there chasing something or putting something on ice right now with the bow.
Yeah, antelope or cow elk. That's what's open.
That's what Dave, everybody say your prayers for Dave, his arch nemesis this year. So we want a bunch of good energy focused on you, Dave.
Yes.
We're going to go out. You're going to put an arrow through a cow elk this year.
Get that thing on the ground.
No fires, no lightning, no sickness, no, no.
Yeah. No apocalyptic events.
Nothing. Let's get this done. Hey, the season is finally here, folks. If you couldn't tell, I got a little bit of a smile in my voice today because hunting season is here. My summer depression can come to
an end. Dun, dun, dun.
Do not go anywhere. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.